Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. For our final show of the year, we're ending in a galaxy far, far away as a brand new Star Wars movie launches in cinemas around the world before we're brought back down to Earth with a tale of betrayal, treachery and perseverance in David O. Russell's Joy. Plus, we'll discuss Eddie Redmayne's transformation into transgender woman Lily Elbe in The Danish Girl. And joining me to talk through this trio of movies is Tim Robey, film critic for The Daily Telegraph. That's all to come here on The Arts Review on Monocle 24. This week marks the cinema event that film lovers and sci-fi fans the world over have been looking forward to all year, the release of the seventh installment in the Star Wars franchise, The Force Awakens. Tim Robey, welcome to the show. Now, before we get stuck into this, I have to put my hands on the table and say I've never, ever seen a Star Wars film. So this will make for an interesting discussion. But before we go into the film itself, can you set up the hype for this film?
Of course, yeah. I mean, obviously, people have been waiting for a good Star Wars film for much longer than 2 decades. Many people bitterly disappointed by the three most recent films, the prequels, as they were called, episodes 1, 2, and 3. This film is very much trying to get back to the spirit of the original trilogy, episodes 4, 5, and 6, if you can understand the modelled chronology there, the prequels being in time, happening before the first three. And J.J. Abrams has taken charge of this film, much as he did with the Star Trek reboot in 2009. And he's done a really quite skillful job of, I think, kind of getting back to what everyone originally loved about Star Wars, eliminating some of the kind of random superfluous effects, the kind of boring political intrigue, and many of the other aspects that people have not lately liked about the series. I think as a newcomer to the franchise, actually, this is a pretty good place to start. It's a pretty good entry-level Star Wars movie. It gives you more or less everything that people really love about the series in one quite slick two-hour package, really.
Perfect. Well, let's have a listen to a clip from this edition of Star Wars.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
There are stories about what happened.
It's true. All of it.
A little sampler there of Star Wars The Force Awakens. Now, I mean, first and foremost, I do have to ask you, does it meet expectations?
I think it does. It really meets them. I wouldn't necessarily say it kind of triumphantly vaults over them. I think J.J. Abrams is more of a really clever kind of magpie of a director who knows how to kind of pluck what worked the first time and kind of reassemble it for us, then he is a sort of visionary with an entirely new imaginative approach to the universe. I don't think he bolts on all that much that's kind of brilliantly, excitingly new. It has a very familiar feel, but that's what it's going for. It's going for the kind of nostalgia value for those who do know the original films well. That kind of heartstring tug of affection for the characters that are brought back, and actually just for the spirit of the kind of the whole idea, really, because the main characters are now entirely new ones. It's just that they interact in a way that's very familiar to us because there's a sort of trio of them, much as there was a trio of characters the first time.
Say entirely new ones, and yet the original cast is back in place.
They are back in place. They're not playing the main roles, that's the thing. Han does get a lot to do in this. Harrison Ford does have a lot to do. And the other two feature, but it's not, you know, they're kind of brought in at different points in the film. I'm being very careful here not to kind of spoil anything for big fans. And many of the other kind of characters, the sort of sidebar characters, are also back on board, and it's just great every time you see these characters reunited. There's a real kind of there's a real emotional pull to it. But I think the best thing about this new film is, in fact, what it does with this with its new characters. Mm. So that the new trio of heroes, if you like, played by Oscar Isaac, John Boyega, and Daisy Ridley, I think are really well drawn. I think John Boyega is very, very funny. Daisy Ridley has a real kind of oomph to her, kind of spark to her. Oscar Isaac, I just generally like Oscar Isaac. I think he's doing a good job as usual. And yeah, especially in the early stretches of the film, I think it's very, very good at juggling all the kind of little narrative elements and getting it kind of whizzing, if you like. And then it kind of settles into a groove, which is very satisfying. But anyone who's seen Star Wars dozens of times, as many people have, will kind of get the hang of it. They'll know the beats of the story that are coming because it replicates them so sort of craftily, and you feel as though it's doing all the same work that the original film did. Mm. It's really structurally very similar to the 1977 Star Wars.
The last Star Wars came out 10 years ago. Cinema has moved on so much and so fast in 10 years. So expectations are going to be so high for the visual impact.
Well, the thing that they've been really clever at doing is in some ways stripping it back, because George Lucas was heavily criticized in those three prequels for the kind of absurd overkill CGI. You know, at every corner of the screen there was something whizzing around, and there was nothing sort of tangible about them somehow. There wasn't enough stuff with actors acting and characters actually talking to each other and kind of weight and substance. And they've deliberately gone in the other direction here, and they've given us, you know, rubber creatures again, and they've given us, they've gone in a more kind of plastic direction, if you like, rather than the CGI direction. Obviously, there is lots of CGI in there because you still have the kind of dogfights and all of this stuff, and it's definitely, things have moved on to the point where they're much slicker now. But I do feel as though there's more weight to it, because they're not just kind of throwing CGI pointlessly across the screen. It's used for more purpose, and it's used kind of a bit more, you know, a bit more kind of decisively.
Excellent. Well, Star Wars The Force Awakens is opening in cinemas and will be around the world this weekend and next. We're going to move on now from a futuristic film to a period piece. The Danish Girl follows married artist Einar and Gerda Wegener on a transformative journey as Einar becomes the first transgendered woman, taking the name Lily Elbe. The film is based on the novel of the same name by David Ebershoff and has already been nominated for 3 Golden Globes, including ones for its 2 lead actors, Eddie Redmayne and Alicia Vikander. Tim, can you set up this film for us?
Yeah, I think the way into it in a way is to talk about Eddie Redmayne and his sort of transformative acting. So obviously now Oscar-winning actor for The Theory of Everything, in which he played Stephen Hawking. And in this film, he takes, in a way, it's a comparable sort of part, because you witness him go through this transformation. He's a biological man who wants to undergo the first ever sex change. And in the process of doing that, he has to sort of deal with the character played by Alicia Vikander, his wife, who has this sort of equivalent role, if you like, to Felicity Jones in Theory of Everything, the kind of understanding wife, and they reach a kind of forking of the path in the way. They reach a crossroads in their kind of marital relations. Tom Hooper, again, Oscar winner for The King's Speech, directs, and he's chosen to make this film at a time when the theme of, you know, of transing is incredibly prevalent in our news and in our kind of consciousness, with Caitlyn Jenner and everything this year that's been going on. So it feels like the right moment for this story, and it's a very interesting story. I don't think the film stylistically is up to the job. I think Tom Hooper applies a kind of house style that he has, which is a very heavy symmetry. It's quite dour. He uses these kind of fisheye lenses a lot. I found the film stylistically kind of off-putting, and that distracted me from the qualities of the performances, which are pretty good. The two leads are quite good. And, you know, they've been Golden Globe nominated. They may sneak into the Oscar list, but I don't think this is now the kind of Oscar frontrunner that people really expected it to be first time around. I didn't find it particularly moving. And I think the story is so remarkable in so many ways. Lily's story, her attempts to transition, and the kind of difficulties of doing that back in the day when she's doing it, should be devastating, should be absolutely heart-wrenching. And I found myself fairly unmoved by it.
Well, let's hear what this sounds like. Here is a clip from The Danish Girl.
Surgery has never been attempted before.
Not my whole life. It could kill you.
It's my only hope.
This is not my body.
I have to let him go. I love you because you're the only person who made sense of me. Who made me possible.
A clip from The Danish Girl. Now, I've been reading some of the reviews and a number of them very similar to you to say somehow a lot of the emotional impact is not where you want it to be. And listening to that track, I think the music is so overdramatic that maybe this is an example where the music is trying to be the emotion and it takes away from the performances.
Yeah, it feels very kind of aestheticized. It's Alexandre Desplat did the score, who I find a very hit and miss composer. He's done some great work, but he also did the score for The King's Speech, which I didn't really like. And I think here he's really kind of hitting sentimental notes a lot of the time. There's a kind of blandness to it, which is a bit of a pity. I also feel as though the screenwriting is quite calculated. You know, Lily is very much a martyr of the transgender movement. We know this, and her, you know, her story resonates today. But the script, Lucinda Coxon's script, does rather hammer away at the kind of every decision being exactly the right one to fit in line with our current kind of thinking about, you know, the way that transitioning works. It feels almost, it's sort of hindsight cinema, if you like. I don't feel as though it's believably of the period in terms of the way the characters talk, the way they make the decisions, the emotional dynamics between husband and wife. I feel as though it's somehow sort of 21st century thinking plonked back into that age. And that is an issue for me. And I think it means that the period trappings don't always work either. I felt as though I was watching a bunch of extras prattling on at cocktail parties and art galleries rather than the real thing. There was a sort of fakeness to it that I found distracting. Yeah, I'm quite down on this film. I think it's of the crop of prestige awards films that we've had in the last month or two. I think it's one of the weakest efforts, actually.
It does look beautiful in terms of quite, you know, they're two artists. It starts in the studio. It does have a certain painterly quality. Am I wrong?
It certainly does. He's definitely emulating some painters from that age, and the kind of canals of Copenhagen, all that kind of thing, are shot and lit in the style of paintings from that era. And you can see that everyone's done their homework to kind of, you know, get it an art direction Oscar nomination. But I think we should be thinking higher than that. And I wish it dug down into the kind of emotional marrow of the story better than it does. I found it superficial.
Well, if you are still intrigued after that, The Danish Girl opened at the Venice International Film Festival this year, and we'll see its initial release on American screens on Christmas Day and look out for it in other regions in the new year. Now, let's end this week's Arts Review with Joy. This film reunites Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper with director David O. Russell after their Oscar-nominated 2012 film Silver Lining Playbook. What's the story here? If it's a linear one.
This is much more linear and easy. Basically, it's about the inventor of a certain type of household mop, who was a struggling housewife who just came up with this invention. The self-spongying mop, if you like, where you use the handle to kind of like squeeze it out. And she managed to come up with this invention despite being an absolutely frazzled mother, having all kinds of problems with kind of an errant husband and all kinds of issues in her life. And she went on the Home Shopping Channel in America to sell it eventually after it initially failed. She was allowed to go on herself, which was a kind of a rare privilege, and it became a kind of phenomenon. And this is a very nice idea for David O. Russell to kind of toy with. I think he brings back Jennifer Lawrence, who has now worked with him twice before, not only Silver Linings Playbook, but American Hustle, where she was nominated for it as well. She's obviously his muse now. He's kind of obsessed with her. I think this is a really good part for her, though. Sometimes I thought American Hustle, really, she's sort of making the best of being miscast in that one. She was way, way too young to be playing that role. And here, I feel this is sort of an Erin Brockovich fit for her. You're on her side completely. The film really takes off in the middle section when Bradley Cooper, who plays the guy who's going to put her on telly to sell this thing, starts to realize, yeah, I might have something here. And there's enough kind of old Hollywood kind of flirtation between the two of them without it becoming a big deal. That's not really the point of the film. Their scenes really click very well. And I think there's some fantastic support as well. Diane Ladd plays her grandma and is wonderful in it. Virginia Madsen is her mother. Robert De Niro is her dad. I was really into this, and I thought I was going to dislike it. I thought this might be a David O. Russell film that I wasn't going to get on with. But actually, it's my favourite one of his since The Fighter, which is the, you know, before Silver Linings.
Well, let's have a listen. This is a clip from the film.
As you grow up and come into the world that has all sorts of things in it, money, crime, betrayal, seems like you're shaking us down.
You can pay more.
I can't, and I won't. When you realize that the only thing you're gonna have is what you make. That never shone
on me. You are in a room, and there is a gun on the table. I want my life to be. The only other person in the room is an adversary in commerce. Only one of you can prevail. Do you pick up the gun, Joy?
I pick up the gun.
And that was a clip from the movie Joy, directed by David O. Russell. Listening to that clip, it sounds a little bittersweet, or sweet bitter.
Definitely, yeah. So there's a bit of a bit of melancholy to it. I mean, I found it very funny, but it's creative with her story. It's not kind of hung up on the kind of biographical details of this, actually. It kind of takes some liberties and kind of goes down a route where she becomes quite kind of gung-ho about really pushing this through and letting her ambitions kind of become reality. And you really, it's quite hard not to root for Jennifer Lawrence in that position. She's just inherently very rootable for. I thought she was great in it. I think she'll hopefully get nominated again. I doubt she would win so soon again, another Oscar, but you can see why David O. Russell is so taken with her. I mean, sooner or later, I think he might have to sort of, you know, think about casting someone else. But this as a vehicle for J-Law at this point in her career feels really kind of lively to me and quite buoyant and as you say, bittersweet.
Is it basically a rags to riches story, or what's the message behind it?
It's sort of like that, yeah. I mean, she's very much a struggling housewife at the beginning. She's got all kinds of household issues she's having to contend with. Her dad is very difficult. Her kind of former partner is out of the picture, and her kids are, you know, requiring all kinds of help. And the one hope she has is this invention that she comes up with. That's the idea. So it has this kind of feminist oomph. Can she kind of break through the system and prove that, you know, a female inventor is worth putting on TV to sell her own invention, her own contraption? And then off the back of that, she has kind of even greater successes. But every way, she's kind of thwarted by male swindlers and the kind of red tape trying to prevent her from actually kind of getting what's rightfully hers, getting the kind of the gross off the back of this thing. And yeah, watching her fight that fight is really fun. And as I say, Erin Brockovich kept springing to my mind, because I thought that was very much the Julia Roberts arc in that film. You know, the female lawyer, is she really going to take this massive case on and win? Who'd have thunk it? That's the idea. And I think J-Law just has that same energy in this part.
Well, definitely one to check out. Joy opens in North America and Northern Europe on Christmas Day and will continue to roll out around the world over the new year. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Tim Robey. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. This show is taking a break for a couple of weeks, but we'll be back on January 4th with a look at some of 2016's upcoming art shows around Europe. In the meantime, tune in at the same time over the festive period when we'll be delving into the vaults of our sessions at Midori House to revisit some of our live music highlights from 2015. For now, we wish you a very Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year from all of us here on the Monocle Arts Review. Thanks for listening.